back to Saturday Miss. It's the time that we would turn the page and consider Yah's testimony. I do want to comment on one thing, though, that was said during the news break, where the President of the United States says that we deplore civilian deaths. Well, if we deplore civilian deaths, why did we invade Iraq? We may have, in the invasion of Iraq, killed 5, maybe 10 members of the Iraqi army. But of the 1 million Iraqis who died, all but about 5 to 10 of them were civilians. And we continued to fight civilians in Iraq and kill them. In Afghanistan, 100% of those that we have killed have been civilians. When we deploy our drones, as this president has done with reckless abandon, flying them above Yemen and Pakistan, for example, we only kill civilians. We haven't killed anybody other than a civilian. 4,000 of them. So when the United States says that we deplore the killing of civilians, well, then we have to deplore what the United States is doing. You know, America wants to celebrate World War II. But ultimately, we prevailed in that war, both in Europe and in Asia, because we killed civilians. We ended that war by firebombing not military targets, but cities in Japan, night after night, and then dropped 2 atomic bombs, not on military targets, but on civilian population centers in Japan. That's killing civilians. We firebombed Dresden in Germany and just bombed the entire city of Berlin into rubble. Yes, we also attempted, at least in Europe for a while, to bomb military targets, but our favorite target, civilians. No. When you say that, try to take the high moral ground and say we deplore a certain act, and you're the most ruthless perpetrator of doing that very act, you have no credibility. This is a serious problem for the United States and its leadership. Now, turning back to Yano's testimony, he used a descriptive word in Bereshith 2:7, that would be Genesis 2:7, in his discussion of the Torah, and in his discussion in the Torah about the nature of human life. And this discussion, particularly when compared to a statement that he made about the discernment, exercising good judgment when considering a relationship with God versus how that relationship should be known and understood. In the book of Job explains the term that God was using. Now, before I share these two passages with you again, with two passages we considered yesterday that are so essential for us to bust out of the realm of being deceived by religion and politics to actually knowing and understanding and therefore being able to respond intelligently. And this is essential to that. Before the show began this morning, my producer Scott and I were discussing the issues surrounding, Tim Tebow, because of Tom Brady's apparent, hopefully minor injury in New England. And Scott and I are both sports enthusiasts. We like to talk about sports during the break. And what I was talking about, maybe it's going to bring back Tim Tebow. And he said, no, it's not going to bring that. But I said, just think about all of the people. And it was the majority of Americans that thought that God was using Tim Tebow, that Tim Tebow was God's quarterback. And because Tim Tebow thanked God for all of his success, that God's quarterback was Tim Tebow. And that this was proof that God, in fact, interacted in the lives of good Christians. But, the Christians, of course, are silent when Tim Tebow is all but drummed out of football and is sitting on the sidelines. unwilling to apply the same standard. And one of the things that Scott said, you know, imagine God being so desperate that he would act like the United States and say, you know, I'm going to bribe you to be my friend. If you agree to be my friend, then if you walk in your backyard, you're going to find a pot of gold. And so everybody decides, you know, I want to be God's friend. Man, if you're his friend, you find a pot of gold in your backyard. So desperate this God would be for friends that he would bribe them. Now, what kind of a friend are you going to get when you bribe them, which is what the United States does with its foreign aid, particularly in the Islamic world? And it is so desperate that Christians think, hey, you become a Christian, and then God's going to micromanage everything that happens in your life, and that you're going to be financially rewarded, that he's bribing you. It is a pathetic perspective. What God is in doing instead is that I want to have a relationship with you. I'm going to introduce myself to you as I really am. I'm going to let you know me. I'm going to prove then that I authored this Torah and prophets so that you can come to trust me. I'm going to do so through prophecy. And then I'm going to lay it out straight for you. I'm going to say, here's the relationship I'm offering. If you want to participate, here are the conditions. And if you do, here's going to be the benefits. But understand, these benefits are only valuable if you want to hang out with me for all eternity. I'm not going to bribe you. I'm going to tell you that if you want to become my child, here are the benefits of reaching out to me as your father. Now, for us to do that, the first thing we have to have is information. You've got to go to the place where God introduces himself and delineates the terms and conditions of the covenant and decide if its benefits are something that you want and if its conditions are something you can accept. Do you like the God, the real God, not the religious God that man has created, but the real God that created man? Do you like him? So you've got to come to know him. And then you've got to use this gift that God gave us, this Nesama, which we're going to speak of in a moment, so that you can process the information that he has provided and come to understand what he's offering. So that you can respond intelligently, rationally, morally, appropriately. And so Yahweh says, Yahweh Almighty formed for association and accompaniment the man, Adam. From the powdery dust, from the minute physical particles of the ground. He blew into his nostrils a life-giving, restoring, and sustaining chaim, this is lives, for the purpose of renewing and prolonging them, a conscience, a nesalma, a seat of judgment, the place where we can discern and discriminate between right and wrong, that which is reliable and that which is not. And then he says, and Adam came to exist as a living soul. Soul is the Hebrew word nefesh. It means consciousness, the ability to observe our surroundings and respond to them. Nesama is equivalent to the English word conscience, which is the ability to process what we observe so that we come to understand. In Job, which has been corrupted to Job, which serves as a book which serves as a referendum, really, on good and evil, on the relationship with God, on the idea that if people are going to judge your relationship with God with how much wealth you have, how many possessions you have, how perfect your human existence is, God is saying, no, that's not the way. Because if you use that as your criterion that, okay, you must have a relationship with God because you never get sick. You must have a relationship with God because your children never have accidents. You must have a relationship with God because you've got the most property and you have the most possessions. And what God did is he says, all right, Satan says, you know, he's only having this relationship because, you know, you've given him everything in the world, as opposed to God doesn't give us possessions. You know, that's God's interest is in the covenant, not in our possessions here on earth. And so Satan says, you know, I'll just nip at his heels. I'll take this. I'll take that. I'll take the other thing. I'll make his life miserable, and he'll bellyache about you. Watch this.
He's also already given us everything that he promised.
I mean, that's true.
He's already given us everything that we need.
Yeah, he gave us the three things that have value because they are the three things that enable us to become a member of his family. You know, what are those three things? Well, two of the three things he has listed right here. A nesama, a conscience, and a nefesh soul, a mortal consciousness or mortal life. Those are two of the three things he gave us. He also gave us free will. Now, if you want to know what he gave us collectively beyond individually, he gave us his Torah guidance so that we could use the three things that these three gifts, our conscience, our consciousness, and free will, to make the right decisions so that we become immortal, perfect, adopted children in his family who are enriched and empowered by him, which are the benefits of the covenant, and use the gifts that he's given us. But so they have this whole argument between Job and others as Satan begins to say, I just take that away, I'll take this away, I'll take that away, and he'll start bellyaching you. And so this is the referendum on the realization that if you view your association with God based upon material possessions, based upon your physical state, then you've got the wrong perspective. You know, the preacher will say, dig deep and give because God loves a cheerful giver. No, we need to recognize that if somebody is successful, God didn't make them successful. If someone has failed, that God was not trying to teach them a lesson. If someone has an accident and dies, it wasn't because God wanted them. We ought to recognize that there's a big picture out there. Yahweh introduced himself, offered his covenant relationship, gave us the gifts necessary for us to evaluate it, to understand it, and to respond to it. That's the big picture. And in Job, he explained the specific benefit of the Nesama and the role that it plays in enabling us to capitalize on his guidance and his offer. And we'll consider it when Shattering Mist returns after the commercial break. Returning to Shattering Mist, I'm your host, Yana. I promised that we would share the passage in Job, which means Yah's Lamb, 32:8, which defines this word that most English Bible translations are want to mislead readers on because they don't want people to know what made Adam special. You know, and if you don't know the uniqueness of this word Nesama, then you can easily be beguiled into believing something that is factually untrue, that Adam was the first human. He wasn't. God didn't say he was the first human. You know, we know for certain that Homo sapien, which is the current genetic version of humanity, existed 100,000 years ago. We've found the fossils of the oldest known Homo sapiens in a cave in Israel just recently. So that's 100,000 years old. Yahweh's story, in terms of his timing of when Adam and Chawa were expelled from the Garden of Eden, dates back just 20 years shy of 6,000 years ago. Now, that does not mean that God created the universe in the 6 24-hour Earth days prior to that time. It means that from the perspective of the Creator at creation, the creative process took 6 24-hour Earth days, which, when you look at the microwave background radiation emanating from the Big Bang, is exactly 14 billion years, the amount of time that now looking back using a clock on Earth, we would ascribe to it, because time, light itself, which is the measure of time, was stretched 10 to the 12th power. So when people misrepresent the words that God says, then religions can misrepresent his testimony, and by so doing, they make God appear stupid. And when you say that the universe is 6,000 years old, not billions of years old, because you misrepresent the testimony, you make God appear foolish. And when you do that, people who might otherwise come to know him are precluded. That's the consequence of religions and religious lies. They aren't harmless. So here is Yahweh explaining this term Nesama, which is the key to understanding how Adam, and therefore we, are unique from other animals. He said, indeed, the spirit, the ruach, is a feminine noun, she and mortal man. So the spirit can be part of our makeup. That we are not born with a spirit, we're born with a soul. But the spirit can come inside of us, can be part of us. Enosh is the Hebrew word for mortal man, and spirit speaks of the spirit of Yahweh, which is eternal. So the eternal spirit, she can come in, bah is the Hebrew word for in, and be with mortal man. But how does that occur? God says it occurs because the Nesama of the Almighty provides understanding and teaches. Well, that's the purpose of the Nesama then. The Nesama, which is the gift of God, which is what makes us like God, even calls it here the Nesama of the Almighty, the conscience, the seat of judgment, the ability to discriminate, to evaluate evidence, and to come to a reasoned conclusion, and therefore to receive teaching and understand, that it is this Nesama that provides the bridge that enables the spirit, which is eternal, which is enlightening, which is perfecting, to reside with and in us. The Nesama, according to this statement in Job 32:8, is the means that we deploy to come to understand what God is teaching us so that we can respond appropriately to what he is offering, and therefore the Spirit, she can come into our lives and perfect us and make us immortal, transforming mortal man into the very image of God by way of his Nesama. So all you have to do to understand what God is saying is to look at the words that he used and then examine how God himself defines those words. It is what made Adam unique. It is a marvelous gift that he has given to us. Now, this gift, this conscience, this ability to be judgmental and to be discerning, it's the very thing that political correctness is attacking. The reason that academia is producing students who are no longer able or willing to think is that those who are opposed to Yahweh have infected our schools so that they now advocate, as do politicians and the media, political correctness whereby we are told, we are indoctrinated to no longer exercise our conscience, to no longer be discriminating or judgmental. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. As we consider this explanation that Yahweh gave us of Nesama, which is the one thing that makes humans different than the animals, the one thing that makes humans like God, not God like humans, but humans like God, is that we have the Nesama of the Almighty. It's the least exercised aspect of our nature today. The entire academic community, the entire political community, the entire media community is all in lockstep to encourage generations of people in the West to stop exercising their Nesama. That's the reason why there is this war against the spoken word. That is why the gay and lesbian lobbies have decided that they would attack Rush Limbaugh. They tried to create their own liberal talk radio programming and failed. So since they don't have an argument for him, they don't have a response to him, their agenda is to label him hateful and therefore themselves kind by comparison. And yet those who are viewing themselves as kind and tolerant, the advocates of political correctness, are the ones who are spewing out the vitriol. When you lose your nesama, your conscience, your ability to exercise good judgment, you begin to view your foes as if they have your failings, and you are unable to see yourself as you really are. And when we raise an entire generation and generation after generation of Americans in politically correct schools, where they watch politically correct news and they listen to politically correct politicians, then we are indoctrinated to no longer exercise good judgment. And when you fail to exercise your nesama, then what happens is you lose the ability to be moral. You lose the ability to be just. You lose the ability to be good. You lose the ability to know who God is or to avail yourself of what he is offering. Hello, Larry. I know that you are one of the few that not only loves your nesama, but exercises it routinely.
Well, let's hope so. I do try. I have to say, I appreciated the fact you explained to people there that Adam wasn't the first Homo sapien. He just happened to be the first one made in the image of Yahweh, which means he had a nesama.
That is correct.
God goes to great lengths to
tell us that, you know, all animals have a soul. He tells us that all animals have a soul. Goes out of his way to say all animals have a soul. And he tells us that all animals were, like all life, was created of the elements of the earth. And so the only thing that makes us different, by his own testimony here, is the nesama. That's the one thing that he says that is unique about Adam. And then he identifies the nesama with himself, which means that he is not politically correct, that he has a conscience, that he is discerning, that he distinguishes between right and wrong. And he says then in Job that this nesama is the means for you to transcend your mortality by understanding me and therefore inviting the Spirit to be part of your existence.
Well, in the same way that you've gone over the fact 15 billion years, our time is 6 days, mm-hmm. six 24-hour periods of time, Yahweh's time.
That's correct.
It's the same thing with Adam. It's the same thing with the flood that was probably, you know, regional, right. not worldwide. Right. And when people start understanding this, then they understand that Yahweh's testimony fits identically with science.
Right. You know, and the advantage of that is
myths and fairy tales that dumb scripture down to the point of you have to be delusional to believe it.
I mean, I think that you know what definitely wants us to understand the nature of creation. I think he wants us to understand human nature. I think he wants us to understand his nature, because the more we understand, the more we understand why the first thing that he spoke into existence was light, and then how time began once matter was able to be formed out of that light, and the relative nature of energy to matter, and then the progression of how light gave way to matter, and matter gave the opportunity through to water to conceive life, and we began with plant life and evolved to animal life, and then ultimately took one form of life and gave that form of life, man, a conscience, and what the conscience was for. When you understand that whole process, then you begin to say, all right, now I think I understand better the nature of God. I understand who he is, what he wants, what he's offering, why he went to all of these means to support this covenant relationship, which is the first thing that he presents that is important to him.
I couldn't agree more. I'm thankful you get it out there. I hope people are taking that in. There is a definite difference between nefesh, a soul, and nesama.
You know, there's so many people that speak of man having a spirit. We don't have a spirit. Yahweh has a spirit, and there are spirits that Yahweh created, and the Malach, the messengers or envoys, of which there are those aligned with Hasatan, the adversary, and those who still work on behalf of Yahweh.
Yeah, last I checked, we're living in a physical realm, not a spiritual one.
Right. We have access to both spirits, and one is productive, one is counterproductive, but we're not a spiritual entity. We can access these spirits through our nesama, but we're not a spiritual entity. We have a soul, and our soul is mortal, and we have a nefesh conscience that enables us to access Yahweh's spirit. And so there's just so much junk out there.
Spiritual beings don't die, do they?
No, they're immortal. In fact, God himself can't kill a spiritual being because he conceives spiritual beings to be like light, and on light there is no ceasing of existence.
Yeah, and there's a place called the abyss for those that that misuse their power or whatever.
Right. And in Hebrew, it's Sheol, which is the place of questioning. And the reason that it's named Sheol, the place of questioning, is that those souls who are incarcerated there, because God can't kill a soul that's associated with a spirit, and you can be associated with the wrong spirit, Hasatans, that they are in what would be best defined as a black hole, which is a lightless place that is infinite in time and yet extraordinarily finite in other dimensions. And the one thing that they will be able to do is to question why in the world they made this decision to oppose God, why they made the decision to lead people away from God, and they will spend their entirety questioning and anguishing over that choice. That's why it's called Sheol. You probably know an individual whose given name was the same, written the same as Sheol, as Shaul.
That would be Sheol, who renamed himself lowly and little, Apollos. Yeah.
And that individual was specifically called out by Yahweh in one of his prophetic books, and saying that Shaul is the plague of death. And he described every aspect of this man, the timing that he would arrive, the message that he would deliver, his personal characteristics, right down to a sexual orientation for us.
Even
and his
in that little barb, he said, and they don't even question him.
Right. Yeah, and then even to find his name, they're saying the big problem is they don't question him. Instead, he was the plague of death. And yet, how few Christians use their nesama, their ability to be discriminating, and they recognize, wait a minute, this is the one person that God explained that was going to do something that was deceptive, and that we don't question him, and therefore we're going to find absolutely no satisfaction, and we don't bother to even think about it.
Yeah,
how many Christians are aware the prophecy even exists?
Well, there's plenty of them out there too that want to believe that because they've seen miracles in this guy's name, or at least following what he did in this Holy Spirit, and we know holy is just a damning term.
Right, it is.
It absolutely is, and we see these people talking about how they're going to, they've seen miracles in this Holy Spirit's name following Paul's path. But, the bottom line is, Yahusha himself said there, I don't even know you. You've done miracles in my name. I don't know you.
Yeah, it's interesting that almost every declaration about a false prophet or false apostle that Yahweh or Yahusha declares, he almost always begins by saying, once you see mighty deeds and miracles being done, then that's when you ought to be questioning. That the presence of showing off in this way, of performing miracles, is the very sign that you've got a show-off here that is trying to impress you. And when you see someone showing off like this, run away from them because they're a false prophet. And so the very thing that Christians base their religion on, I feel like I had a religious conversion experience, and I've seen miracles done, and I've seen answers to prayer. And what God is saying, when you see that kind of stuff and somebody showing off and intervening in free will, turn the other way. That's someone who is not representing me. And it really gets down to the difference between Lord and Father. Fathers don't show off to their children. They love them, they hug them, they lead them, they nurture them, they shelter them, they care for them. But the last thing a father wants to do is show off. A father is not going to make a big explosion in the presence of the home to say, look how much power I have. But lords do.
Not a lords like one would.
Yeah, lords. Yeah, I guess a suicide bomber father in training would do that. But, you know, lords do. You know, what is Hasatan wants? He wants to be greater than Yahweh.
He wants to be worshipped as God.
Right. So he's gonna show off.
Right.
God doesn't show off. It's not his style. You know, God could, if he wanted to, he could be, his face could be in the sky above every country we could look up, and rather seeing stars could see him. He, rather than listening to radio and television, his voice could be booming and give us no option but to say, okay, I capitulate already. Stop it with a booming voice. I'd like to see the stars for one night. But that's not his style. He's not a show-off. He doesn't like the idea of forcing people's hands. And so, if you want to know God, you're going to find him approachable, humble, you know, very real. But down to earth, so down to earth, he'll get on his knees to lift us up. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Very few things are as relevant to us to knowing and understanding what makes us unique. Because when we understand that we have a conscience, a seat of judgment, the capacity to understand, in addition to a mortal soul, which gives us the ability to be observant and to respond, then we find that there is a way for us to process the most valuable things in life, which is to come to know God and to engage in the covenant relationship with him. The catalyst which makes this possible is the Nesama. Without the Nesama, there could be no covenant relationship, because we would not have the capacity to make a reasonable, moral, loving decision. We would simply be animals without our Nesama. And so it is amazing that the thing that is most important to us coming to know who Yahweh is and understand the covenant relationship that he is offering so that we can respond to him and to it intelligently is something that is never discussed in any of the religions that claim to be gateways to God. Larry, you talk to a lot of Christians. Have you ever heard of one that said, you know, if you want to understand God, you need to exercise your Nesama?
No, they have no idea what it is. And I had an interesting discussion, you know, on FB, because one of the things you see a lot of little cutesy things go by, like, oh, God, without you, I'm nothing. I love you, you know, on and on. Of course, they're loving a God that threatens them with hell. If he doesn't love them, and if they don't love them, and further, they love this idea of shaking in fear, and of course we can't love what we fear. So I guess you're all destined to hell if that's the God you worship, and since he's not into worship, obviously you're in the wrong spirit of things. And I had a discussion with a guy who was he was into the whole fear thing.
Yes,
you know,
he
was
sure.
Be fearful, be on your knees. And so, you know, I explained to him using, you know, Qumran scrolls, the oldest extant version
Witness.
We have, that says, for so much as these people approach me with their mouths and their lip service, yet they remove their hearts from me, their yira, which can be either respect or fear, and in this case it's got to be fear, because Yahweh's not saying respect towards him exists, because it's taught by man-made traditions learned by rote. He's saying fear is. So we know that all fear, it says their fear towards me exists because it is taught from man-made traditions learned by rote. Later we find in Hosea, he saves that Yahweh is saying to us that he wants to be welcomed as an individual, not as a religious deity.
Right.
So you know, we know for sure and certain he doesn't want us fearing and shaking in front of him with fear. He doesn't want us on our knees, and he's not interested in being a religious deity. He wants to be welcomed as an individual named Yahweh. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, but what you're saying is some people might be listening and saying, how did Larry go from understanding this nesama, this conscience, to fear and to worship? Well, they are related. And the reason they're related is Yahweh tells us that he wants to us to approach him through understanding. If we approach him through understanding, then we're not going to fear him. If we approach him through understanding, we're not going to worship him. If we approach him through understanding, we're not going to be religious. If we approach him through understanding, then we're going to come to know who he is, understand why he created the universe, why he created us, the value and the purpose of the covenant, and how to embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant so we avail ourselves of its benefits. Understanding and attitude are very similar kinds of things. When we have the proper understanding of God as Father, and that all he wants is for us to choose to participate in his covenant after we have come to know him, and then he's going to save his children. When we have the right understanding of God, then our attitude towards God mirrors that understanding. We don't worship him. We don't fear him. We don't try to get people to by compulsion, to accept him. We simply say, here is what he is offering. Here is who he is. This is how you avail yourself of what he is offering. This is where you learn about him. If you would like to know him as he really is, as we know him, here's his invitation. And all of that is possible because of this nesama. And so when our religious clerics hide the identity of this vital aspect of our nature, they preclude people from forming the right attitude and approach towards God. We'll be back with you tomorrow. May Yah bless. Thank you, Larry.